My motion triggered a frenzied howl from the others in the room, and they came surging toward me like a dozen creatures with one controlling mind. The shotgun roared and threw a flash of white light over the room, showing me a frieze of half-dressed or naked men and women hurtling towards me, their faces twisted with grimaces of berserk anger. The force of the blast slammed into my shield. It wasn't quite enough to shatter the protective shield, but it made my bracelet grow warm and shoved my opposite shoulder hard against the wall. I stumbled, thrown off balance. One of the men, a heavyset fellow with his shoulders covered in tattoos, got between me and the door. I ran at him. He spread his arms to grab me, assuming I would try to get past him. Instead, I drove my fist at his nose as hard as I could. I don't carry a lot of power on my own when I punch, but when I added the kinetic energy stored in the ring, my fist became a battering ram of bone and flesh, flattening the man's nose in a gout of blood and sending him sprawling to the ground 6 feet away. I was through the door in a flash and felt the sun's warm heat on my back. I pelted toward the beetle, my long legs covering the ground quickly. "Stop! Stop!" the leader shouted, and I cast a glance over my shoulder to see him, an older man with greasy hair beginning to go gray. He planted his feet in the doorway, facing inside, held the shotgun across his body, and shoved the people trying to get past him. I threw myself into the beetle and jammed the key into the ignition. The car wheezed and rattled, but didn't start. Damn it. My hands were trembling, but I kept trying to get the car going, using every trick I knew to coax the engine to life while watching the door. The leader of the street wolves was still there, fighting to hold the frenzied group inside. They were screaming and howling, but he shoved them away, clubbed them down with a shotgun like wild dogs, the muscles in his shoulders and back straining. "Parker!" screamed one of them, the woman who had begun the killing chant. "Let me through!" He swatted her down with the butt of the shotgun without hesitation. Then Parker turned his head toward me, and I met his eyes. There was a swimming moment, and then I was past his eyes to what lay behind them. Fury overwhelmed me, naked lust for meat, for the hunt. I needed to run, to kill. I was invincible, unstoppable. I could feel the power in my arms and hands, feel the raw energy of the wild coursing through me, sharpening my senses to animal keenness. I felt his emotions like they were my own. Fury behind rigid control, the ocean beating at a tide wall. The fury was directed at me, Dresden, at the man who had invaded his territory, challenged his authority, and driven his people out of control, endangering them. I saw that he was the leader of the lycanthropes called the Street Wolves, men with the minds and souls of beasts, and that he was aging, not as strong as he once had been. Others, like the woman earlier, were beginning to challenge his authority. Today's events might tear him from leadership, and he would never live through it. If Parker was to live, I had to die. He had to kill me, pure and simple, and he had to do it alone to prove his strength to the pack. That was the only thing that kept him from coming at my throat that very second. Worse, he didn't know a damn thing about last month's killings. And then the moment was past, the soul gaze over. Parker's face was stunned. He had seen me in much the same way I had seen him. I didn't know what he saw when he looked upon my soul. I didn't want to know what was down there. I recovered from it before he did and fumbled at the keys again. The beetle coughed to life, and I pulled out and onto the street, swerving wildly before gathering speed and heading back uptown as quickly as I could. I shook the entire way, my shoulders so tight with fear and reaction that I could hear my collarbones creaking with strain. I could still hear the mewling chants of kill him, in my head. Those things in that garage had not been people. They had looked like people, but they weren't. They scared the hell out of me. While sitting in an intersection, I slammed my hand on the steering wheel, abruptly angry. "Stupid Harry," I said. "How could you have been so stupid? Why in the hell did you go wandering in like that? Do you recognize how close those Neanderthal freaks came to tearing you apart?" I glared ferociously out my side window at an old lady in a business suit who was staring at me as though I were a ranting madman, which, I suppose, was what I looked like. I stopped myself from glaring at her, took a deep breath, and tried to calm down. A couple of blocks later, I was able to start thinking straight again. Parker and the Street Wolves were not responsible for the murders last month. That didn't make them any less dangerous. They were lycanthropes, the kind Bob had told me about, and I could see now why they had been feared. People with the souls of beasts, possessed of a ferocity so great that it could transform them into something inhuman without altering a single cell of their bodies. They lived in a pack, and Parker was their leader. I had challenged his dominance in my clueless, bumbling way, and now he couldn't afford to let me live, or he'd be killed himself. So now, I had to worry about someone else coming after me, trying to kill me. Not only that, all of this trouble had come gratis, without giving me any lead on the true culprit of the Lobo killings. Maybe it was a good time to leave town for a while. I brooded over that for a block or so, then shook my head. I wouldn't run. I had made this trouble for myself, and I could get out of it myself. I had to stay, to help Murphy find the killer, to help save lives before the full moon rose again. And if Parker wanted to kill me, well, he'd find out that doing in a full-fledged wizard was no easy task. I gripped the steering wheel grimly. If it came to it, I would kill him. I knew I could do that. Technically, I suppose, Parker and his lycanthropes weren't human. The first law of magic, thou shalt not kill, wouldn't necessarily apply to them. Legally, I might be able to make a case for the use of lethal magic to the White Council. I just wouldn't be safe for myself. I wouldn't be safe from the loathing I would feel, using a tool made of life's essence, its energy, to bring an end to life. Magic was more than just an energy source, like electricity or petroleum. It was a power, true, but it was a lot of other things as well. It was all that was deepest and most powerful in nature, in the human heart and soul. The ways in which I had applied it were crude and clumsy in comparison to the magic in its pure form. There's more magic in a baby's first giggle than in any firestorm a wizard can conjure up, and don't anyone tell you any different. Magic comes from what's inside you. It's part of you. You can't weave together a spell that you don't believe in. I didn't want to believe that killing was deep inside of me. I didn't want to think about the part of me that took dark joy in gathering all the power it could and using it as I saw fit, everything else be damned. There was power to be had in hatred, too, in anger and in lust, in selfishness and in pride. I knew that there was some dark corner of me that would enjoy using magic for killing and then long for more. That was black magic, and it was too easy to use. Easy and fun, like Legos. I parked the Beetle in the lot of my office building and rubbed my eyes. I didn't want to kill anybody, but Parker and his gang might not give me any choice. I might have to do a lot of killing if I was going to live. I tried not to think too much about what sort of person it might be who survived. I would burn that bridge when I came to it. I would go up to my office and hold business hours for the rest of the day. I would wait for Murphy to call me and give her any aid I could. I would keep my eyes and ears open in case Parker or any of his gang came after me. There wasn't much more I could do. It was frustrating as hell. I went up to my office, unlocked it, and flipped on the lights. Gentleman Johnny Marconi was seated at my desk in a dark blue business suit, and his hulking bodyguard, Mr. Hendricks, was standing behind him. Marconi smiled at me, but it didn't touch the corner of his eyes. "Ah, yes, Mr. Dresden. Good. We need to talk."